What's going on, everyone? Welcome to episode 90 of the Foundation First Fitness Show. Today, we are doing a video interview with a very, very special guest. I think she has a lot of interesting information to talk to us about. Really one of the brightest minds so far that I've been able to speak to in the last few years, especially regarding nutrition and performance in nutrition. But I'm not going to steal any more of your thunder. Karen, please tell us a little bit about yourself, a little bit about the background in the field. I'm going to let you kind of take the lead now.
Sure. Well, right off the bat, my name is Corinne.
Corinne.
It's spelled like Karen. It's okay.
That's how you started. That's how you started this? That's how we're starting this? Oh my.
It spelled kind of like Karen, but it's not. So, call me Corinne.
You never corrected me until now. And then it's like, yeah, we're on the show. All right, okay, it's Corinne.
There's never a dull moment on this podcast.
Apparently not.
No, but I am a nutritionist. I specialize in working with mindful athletes. I would say mindful athletes are kind of just high-performing humans who are looking to fuel their performance in and out of the gym. I come from a nutritional science background, so I went to school to be a dietitian, but I ended up not wanting to work for public health. I really enjoy incorporating elements of holistic nutrition and functional medicine into my practice, so that's kind of allowed me the freedom to do that. And I work with competitive athletes in CrossFit, Olympic weightlifting, triathlons. But what I really love to do is work with everyday athletes. These are just people who value exercise and nutrition as kind of part of their personal development. This is kind of a little bit about me.
That's crazy. That's actually like, there's so many things that I'm trying to hit on. And as you were going through, I'm like, this is good.
That's good.
What populations do you like working with?
Populations.
Yeah. Which athletic population, like, is there something specific that's really interesting to you or?
Not anything in particular. I think what I really look for is character in a person, right? Someone who is an action taker, someone who has a lot of positive, energy, and someone who has like a mindset of abundance or like a growth mindset. Really? I think that's more important than the particular lifestyle or sport that they want to, participate in.
That's awesome. When you talk about like performance, like what is exactly the benefit of that nutrition to that performance? Like, what are you looking for? What are you looking to change in them that's going to allow them to perform better?
Yeah, I think performance and nutrition are similar in that they're both just expressions of how people view themselves or how they view the world. And I think when someone has like a strong sense of who they are and what they want to create with their life, then performance automatically will improve, will optimize because they have that clarity. And I think with nutrition, it's just the means of taking care of yourself, nourishing your body and fueling your mind so that you have the capacity to care about things like that. Whereas when someone's in survival mode or they're barely getting by with the nutrition that they're eating, they don't have any space to think about things like
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think with training is the same. I'm sure you can agree. People tend to want to do things for other people, or they are motivated by like comparison or just really toxic reasons sometimes. And when they're able the results that they see are just far beyond just what they see in the mirror.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought you were about to swear right there. I was going to laugh. You can say it. It's okay. Don't worry about it. That's fine.
Sometimes
my mom's going to be like, oh my God. But the rest of people are going to be like, yeah, it's normal. I had a good question I written down. What has gotten you into this? Like why did you choose nutrition as opposed to every other? Cause you told me a bit about your strength conditioning stuff and how you were like a coach, but why nutrition? Like cause I know they're similar, but there's such a, it's still like a different, I guess, line of it, you know?
Yeah. I think, oh man, that's a hard question to answer because
was there like a moment that you just went like, yep, it's,
I think I just started off as a foodie. Like I've always just loved food.
Okay. So there, yeah.
I loved cooking and baking and all of that. I think it started with that. And then eventually I've also struggled through my own like relationship with food and things like that. And I think that led me to want to learn more for myself. And over time, I discovered that I had this breadth of knowledge that I could share with other people and make their lives better and maybe save them from some of the struggles or the lessons that I had to learn. That's a really good question. I don't think I've ever thought about that.
So when did you kind of figure out that you wanted to do nutrition? Was it like early on, or were you still kind of, you landed on it because you thought it might have been a good fit?
No, I wouldn't say it was my first choice. I actually went to school. I got into like a pre-med program at Waterloo initially. And after going to school there for about a year, I was just so miserable. Like it felt like there was such a disparity between the information that I was learning and the information I would eventually be allowed to teach people.
Yeah.
And not to knock public health in any way. It's obviously very important, especially at a time like this right now.
Regulations slow it down a lot.
Yeah, I think so. I think the way that the system is set up makes it very hard for people to make meaningful change. Yeah. And I think being an impatient person, I wanted to see something that was more instantly gratifying. And nutrition had always been something that I was interested in. So I just made the switch over to Ryerson.
Wow. Were you always like a home cook? Did you always like cooking at home and stuff like that? Was it from a young age or?
I always liked to eat. I didn't always like to cook. I think when you're learning anything new, you don't necessarily like it in the beginning. Yeah. So you're kind of forced to learn against your will. But I'm really happy that my mom like made it like a thing for us to cook together, to make dinner together. And she was able to impart a lot of her knowledge and I guess show a lot of her care in that way. I come from like an immigrant background. I'm a first generation immigrant here. So growing up, food was like one of the few ways that I think my parents and I had that intersection. Like we didn't speak the same language by the time I was a teenager. English had become like my go-to language.
Really?
And then we also have that generational gap, that cultural gap. So food was like such a great way for us to come together.
Wow. It's incredible. It's crazy how you start, like when you start talking to people and about how they get into this, like their fields and stuff like that, they start peeling things back and they go like, wow, I never really thought of what got me here. Like I got into this field. It was so funny. We were doing like kind of a intro or story of how we came to be in our field of work. And then like, cause my sister and I run this business. So my sister's a therapist, does the athletic therapy and I do strength conditioning. And we were like, I kind of looked at her. I'm like, I don't even know when I got into the field. Like she was in the field ahead of me and I was just like, guess this is what I'm doing. And I just kind of like went into it and we hated each other before that. And then became like best friends after. And now we're like inseparable. Like if I don't talk to my sister in a day, like I'm like, what's going on with me?
That's fascinating to me because I'm an only child and I could not fathom like loving someone as selflessly as I do my parents. You know, it's like this other person that didn't give birth to you.
Oh, believe me. I didn't love her the first 18, 20 years. Okay. Believe me. The first 18, 20 years were not so selfless. There was a little bit of selfishness in there.
Well, that's the thing. Like how do you make the pivot, right? When you start off not feeling that way about someone and then you eventually do. It's cool.
Yeah. But it's been good here. We've enjoyed like the kind of process of just being, you know, brother and sister kind of getting this thing going. I mean, it also brings down the whole barrier of being polite and treading lightly on what we actually more like, I don't like this. It's like, all right, well, I guess she's not lying. So.
Right. What's the age gap between you guys?
4 years.
And she's older?
Yeah. She's older. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So. I mean, as a kid, that would be very significant.
Oh but yeah. Now it's like, now where it's so much closer that it's like, we don't even really notice it. Most people actually think she's younger than me. So like, oh, you must be the older brother. I'm like, nope, she's the older sister. Thanks, I appreciate it.
Good genetics on her end.
years are kicking me in the butt now. So she still looks young. So what do you want me to do? Yeah, it's not too bad. What have you been up to over the, because I know everyone knows now, everyone's listening, knows that we're in like a big quarantine period, but what have you been up to during this time?
Well, I was telling you, I just got back from spending 2 months in South America. I got back just in the nick of time. And since then, so when I was in South America, it didn't seem like such a big deal. It felt like watching like a fire from very far away.
Yeah.
where it's like, oh, you're like, oh shit, that's really bad. Oh, there it goes.
That's fine. It's good. We're good. It's over. We got it out. Now we're good to go.
Smooth. Oh crap. There we go. Like, oh crap. It seems really bad. Like you see the toilet paper hoarding and people like getting into fights at grocery stores.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems surreal.
Yeah. It's surreal. Like I'm like, my city's, people in my city are acting like that. And then it wasn't until I got back that I realized the severity of the issue. And I think it took me a little bit of time to come to terms with the fact that this is just our new way of life. Like the old way of doing things is gone. And it's not fair to expect things to be the same, but it's also not productive to wallow and let things fester the way that they happen. Yeah, so I think getting over that, and then also just looking forward to creating different digital experiences for people online, because now all of our gazes are on social media. We have this big platform, this big audience, and just trying to find different ways to make an impact there.
Yeah. I mean, I think this quarantine time has like exposed a lot of people. It's exposed a lot of what I've done. Like it literally made me have to like rethink everything that I was doing in this field, just because I was like, oh, I'm like, you go from doing everything hands-on face-to-face to, okay, how am I supposed to work with clients? Like it's making me rethink, like, how do I get more creative about what I'm doing? How do I get more creative about my message? What is my digital presence like? What am I doing? What kind of a message am I sending? Like we were speaking about it like before, you know, we were talking about storytelling and really trying to understand how to tell people like, what is your value proposition? What are you really trying to help people with? What are you trying to tell people? Becomes really, really challenging when you can't show them something or people can't get referred to you because, well, they can't just walk in your doors. You can't train and treat them. So you have to really like, how do I get my message out there without telling them like, do you notice your back pain goes away? Or do you notice that you're jumping higher? It's like, all right, how do I? So that ability to deliver has definitely been, I think, more challenging for me.
Don't you find it such a paradox that now we're all online and we have access to millions and billions of people around the world at the same time for free, essentially.
Yeah.
But it feels like it's diluting the message and it's making it harder to get our point across in like a efficient, effective way.
It's crazy. It's like, I think it's like, and I feel like the opposite's so true too. Like everyone, when we were able to just kind of see people, everyone wanted to go online. Yeah, now the only thing we can do is go online and everyone's like, I just want to see my buddy right there. It's like, dude, you had like the last 19 years, you spent 19 years like glued to this thing. Yeah. And now all of a sudden you're like, so it's been definitely interesting. What kind of stuff have you been working on? Like in, I guess, professionally, like what kind of things have you been doing? What do you got going on in the next coming weeks?
I've been diving back into education, which has been honestly a blessing. I think going back to old like course materials from courses that I've taken or reading books that I've been putting off for way too long. That really brings me a lot of grounding. It's a good way, if ever anyone feels like they suffer from imposter syndrome, like I think the antidote to that is education. Is, oh, really? What? Your stuff is so good. How could you say that?
Every time I walk into a workout, when I walk into a group of people, like I don't like presenting in front of people because I feel like someone's going to stand in the back, call me out, and I'm not going to. I have the weirdest thing. I will sit in my car. I swear that this is the God's honest truth. There was like a 25-minute drive between my house and my office. Right. And I will debate topics out loud with no one else in the car.
Oh,
the weirdest thing. I will be like I hate to cut you off on this one. It's such a weird thing. I love that I'm actually saying this because I can actually talk. Like it's the weirdest thing now that I think about it. I had a conversation about like simple exercise, bench pressing, and how bench pressing and like dumbbell pressing and the comp and the difference between the two. And some guy called me out on it one time, but it was like, the funniest thing was that the guy called me out on it for my comment saying that I had like, I was completely off my comment, but I'm like, actually, I'm like, I've had this argument in my head like 19 times. So all my answers were just flowing out. I'm like, blah, 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 blah. And the guy was just like, I have no idea what to say. Like he had nothing to say. He was just stunned because he's like, I wasn't. So I honestly, I think that's the, I don't know where we went. I don't know how we got to this conversation. How we got
Imposter syndrome,
but that's what it is. Like I literally will have those conversations because I have a fear of someone calling me out in like a discussion being like, no, that's not how it works. No, that's not how it does. No, that's not what happens. And I'm like, and I don't know what to do. I'm like,
That's fair. That's, you know what? That recently happened to me.
Really?
Yeah. And it wasn't nutrition related. It was like stay home quarantine related. Someone's like, you're not doing quarantine right. And that, I don't know what it is, but that is like, even though it's obvious, it's something serious, but it has nothing to do with my career or like my expertise in this field, but it still hurts. Yeah. It almost feels like it's humiliating and it.
They probably challenge your integrity and you were probably like,
yeah, I think so. It's like,
how are you?
Yeah. It's like, I do what I can to get the best information that I can. Absolutely. And education is one way to do that. But beyond that, no one knows everything. So it's okay. Like even people that have PhDs or are experts in the field don't know everything.
Yeah.
So, yeah. We put a lot of pressure on ourselves.
100%. What have you been reading lately that's been, give me a book that you've been reading that's been really interesting for you.
I just finished reading Essentialism by Greg McEwen.
Essentialism by Greg McEwen.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's more like mindfulness, performance related in that it's about being an essentialist, like someone who does less but better.
Talk to me about that. That sounds really interesting to me because it sounds a lot like what I do, but keep going because I think it might be similar to what I...
Yeah, so that's a good one. So doing less but better is just being more efficient. I think a lot of people say yes to everything, and this pertains to nutrition and exercise in that they say yes to foods or they say yes to social occasions that they don't actually want to go to, and they have this sense of like, I need to do it for whatever XYZ reasons. Mm-hmm. And this book just kind of breaks it down and says like, well, do you actually, you know, is it actually benefiting you? Is it actually driving you towards your goal? If saying yes isn't, then why do that? Why waste your energy and your resources on that? So it's more, it's less conceptual and a little bit more like framework oriented. So it offers tools that people can actually apply. And one really interesting I learned from that book is it kind of frames worrying, which is something that we're all doing right now, as a habit versus an emotion, which to me is mind-blowing because I feel worried all the time. And to me, that's an emotion. But it makes the argument that worrying is actually a habit because when you worry, you're triggering reactions that lead to a reward. And that reward is feeling a sense of familiarity, feeling like you're in control. Like if you worry, then you have control of the situation, then you can't be blindsided. You can't be thrown off your game because you've been anticipating it. I hope that makes sense. But yeah, I mean, to me, that's just...
I'm not looking at you because I'm confused. I'm looking at you because I'm like...
Oh shit. Like
I'm like, oh my God, what have I been doing the last 10 years?
Yeah, totally. That was me. I had to reread that part twice. I was like, it's a choice. Worrying could be prevented, but it could be, it's a habit.
Damn it. That's crazy. Remember what I was telling you before? I was like, I'm going to like sit there and just kind of like fall into this and just be like, wow. And just like taking all your information, completely forget about the entire interview. This is happening right now. Like I'm completely, I was like, as we're talking, I was like, oh my God, I do this exact same thing all the time. What's going on with my life? That's crazy. What is it? So bringing us maybe potentially kind of back into the discussion, mindfulness and nutrition. Talk to me about that. What are you looking to tell people? What's the purpose of that?
I think when people think of mindfulness and nutrition, their initial instinct is, that means I should think less about food, or I should just like go with the flow and listen to my intuition. I don't think that's the case. I think in order to inject mindfulness, which is this very free, like free-spirited concept, I think in order to inject more mindfulness, you actually have to lay down structure first. I think structure precedes mindfulness. Like you have to create habits. You have to build systems and protocols and things that are logical before you can afford mindfulness.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So I love that. Like whenever I work with a client, I approach it with almost like this, idea of a nutrition pyramid. And that's different from the Canada's food guide pyramid that they offer.
Talk to me about this nutrition pyramid. I want to hear it. Yeah, I feel like people need more like structured information because the food guide is like crap.
No, I mean, like, they've changed it to be a little bit better, but even when I was in school, so the old food pyramid, that was what I was learning. That was like painful to sit through classes. Okay, so with the nutrition pyramid, it's just a system of hierarchy, of importance, of the things that you need to address first before you move on to the next consecutive step. And I think for every person on planet Earth, regardless of who you are, the most important thing, first and foremost, is nutrient quality. So getting the majority of your diet from whole food sources, from minimally processed foods, things that take very few steps from the field or the farm to your table, because these are foods that are packed with not only macronutrients, but micronutrients as well. And all of these are fundamental constituents of who we are as people. They form the cells that we are comprised of. They form like hormones, neurotransmitters, hair fibers, muscle mass, whatever. And then the next step beyond that is thinking about macronutrient ratio. So like portion control, the amount of energy you're intaking.
This is the next step up in the pyramid.
Yes. So the next important thing. Yeah. So after you've addressed nutrient quality, then you can look at macronutrient ratio. And then after that, I would say are more lifestyle related things. Things are like sleep management or stress management, your relationship with food, energy and blood sugar regulation throughout the day. These are things that have an indirect impact on your like urge or food choice in general. Like, for example, if you don't sleep well, then the next day you're bound to crave more carbohydrates or foods that bring you comfort because you're operating from a deficit, or you're just setting your physiology up in a way that craves those things. And then after that, the next step up is nutrient timing, or for a lot of people that looks like intermittent fasting these days. So when you're eating your food, right? So first we address what you're eating and then how much you're eating, and then all these other factors that affect how much you're eating and what you're eating, and then when you're eating. And then I think the tip of the pyramid is supplementation, because it's the thing that you should address last. A lot of people start there. That's very normal for diet culture, is they want to start with a fat burner or start with whey protein. But if you don't even know what protein is or what it does for your body and how to get it through whole food sources, then you have no business looking for supplementation. So that's kind of the approach that I take with a client.
It sounds like you're approaching it from, and I'm kind of trying to mundane terms this whole thing, but you're approaching it from an area of what is going to move the needle the furthest. Let's start with that.
Yeah. So what's going to be the smallest change that's going to make the most impact? Biggest difference. Yeah. And not only the biggest difference in the moment, but also a permanent difference.
Okay.
Something that's, like if you address everything from the top down, if you look at supplements first, you don't have a strong foundation of nutrition, of habits, of a relationship with food. And so that's going to crumble really quickly. Even if you do see results initially, that won't last long, because over time, you're going to need to rely on those foundational skills in order to go far. So I always say, like, the wider the base, the taller the pyramid. If you want to build a really tall pyramid, you got to reinforce the foundations of that structure.
That's literally going to be the intro to this entire show. Right there.
Soundbite.
Soundbite that out. That's gonna be how it starts. I love it.
Amazing.
Three things that people can do to start eating to improve their performance. Three things they can do to start improving their performance.
Okay. First thing is building your diet on a foundation of whole foods. So making sure that 80% of your intake are foods that you can either cook at home or coming from a source that you can rely on or trust. And going back to what I said before, you don't just need proteins, fats, and carbs to survive. You also need things like fiber, minerals, vitamins, antioxidants, live enzymes, cofactors, things like that to thrive, right? To actually achieve the goals that you want to achieve and be the kind of person that you want to be. And a lot of foods out there right now are engineered by like a giant team of professionals and scientists in a lab so that it's hyper palatable, so that it's so delicious that it's irresistible, that you keep coming back for more, that you overindulge in it. So really, if you're keeping foods like that around, then you're really setting yourself up to overeat and still be malnourished, because those aren't nutrient dense foods. The second thing I would say is when you're building a meal or building a plate, to start with protein and vegetables. Not that these are more healthy or like biohacky than other foods. I think that they're just, from my experience, the foods that people tend to neglect the most in the standard North American diet. We're very accustomed to eating carbs and fats because they're delicious. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to protein and vegetables, they tend to be afterthoughts in right. the standard diet. So I think if you're able to put them at the forefront of your consideration, you'll just be more successful in building a meal that's going to meet your needs. And then the last thing I think everyone can benefit from is drinking more water, especially right now. Most people don't drink enough of water. There we go. So people don't actually know this, but water is a macronutrient. It is the nutrient that comprises the most of your body. If you're not 70% water, then you're probably not doing so well on the health front.
Right.
And water has so many benefits, not only to the average person, but to an athlete, in that they carry nutrients around our body. They help us detoxify. They help us thermoregulate. All of these are vital functions to being a healthy, performing human. So yeah, that's definitely something that's like a low-hanging fruit. Again, like water in Canada is free and our tap water is drinkable. Like there's no excuse why one well hydrated.
It's to be honest with you, I think a lot of what you said is, it's like we have so many options available to us mm-hmm. that like almost eating healthy is kind of like, it's like, guys, like this is, it shouldn't be that much of a battle. Like there are so many options that we have. There's so many ways to go around it. There's so many, you can go to places, you can get by in bulk and like save a ton of money on it. Mm-hmm. Like there's just so much, there's so many excuses that we can come up with. Like, I don't like it. You know, these, that, the other things, like, oh, they don't last long, blah, 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 blah. But honestly, like if you really want to, I think a lot of this is achievable, especially the drinking the water thing. Like that should be basic. Like I started, I never used to drink water. And for, I felt like I was like a camel. Like I could literally like not drink water forever and I'd be fine. And then for some reason I was like, I think I hit 25 and I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to look old. So I got to drink water. And I literally just started chugging water all the time. And now I'm like terrified of like being dehydrated for like even more than an hour. So,
yeah, I mean, I also want to give credit to people because we are at the mercy of our food system, right?
100%.
Whatever's profitable, whatever's easy to sell, that's the stuff that we get inundated with. And sometimes it's hard to navigate that landscape. So going to school as a dietitian, something that I found was super interesting is like food security. Like there are people that live in pockets of cities where there's a food desert and they literally do not have access to fresh vegetables or fresh foods or whole mm-hmm. food. So that advice to them is very privileged. For them, it's difficult, but for the rest of us, like we should be taking more advantage because we
100%.
Have
that. Absolutely.
Yeah, like we owe it to everyone else that doesn't. And we also vote with our dollars, right? Ultimately, what you purchase more of is what the markets are going to. Yeah. So as people with privilege and with access to good food, we have a responsibility to the rest of the world to make that decision for them and to ensure that that isn't
organic food. Organic food didn't exist.
Yeah.
I mean, that's 15, 20 years ago, organic food was like unheard of. You would have to go to like the farmer's market to get whatever would be technically organic because it would be grown like a local farm. Da, 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 da. Now it's like you walk into like, yeah, I know you guys have, we don't have Whole Foods, which kills me. That's like murder. Like literally I go to Toronto and I'm like, I can't wait to go to Whole Foods. Everyone's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I just need to go to Whole Foods. I just need to feel it. I just need to be inside and let the air hit me. It's just,
I just want to stand in front of the $10 cut mango.
Yeah.
That was cut by someone named Noah.
It's like so ridiculous, but it's like, I don't care. I just need to be here. But yeah, like that stuff never existed like 10 years ago, 15 years ago. And now it's occupying such a huge chunk of like any grocery store. You get like these organic sections. You get the, you know, the like gluten-free never existed. Now there's like tons of it. So like you said it right. It's the market's really going to decide. And as we start eating and making better choices, like we're going to shift the attention to that. So I think that's definitely on its way. Social media stuff, What kind of stuff are you doing social media wise? Are you like on Instagram? I know you're on Instagram, obviously, but what else? All your stuff's going to be at the bottom. Everyone who's listening, watching, it's all going to be at the bottom link. So don't worry about it. Yeah.
I would say social media is an enigma to me. Like, I am still trying to figure it out. For now, I am
really
primarily on Instagram. I have one video on TikTok, and it's an embarrassing dance video. So nobody go check that out. Damn it.
You're like, why would you say that? It's the only thing I want to do now.
It's that new Drake song, that Tootsie Slide song.
Okay.
Everyone in Toronto like absolutely needs to do it. If you live here, you have like a...
So I don't have to do it. I don't live there. Good. Perfect. Thank you. Yeah. I appreciate that.
That's well, if you want to eventually live here or move here, then you should probably get that out of the way.
It's like a, what's it called? A rite of passage.
Exactly. Yeah. You have to follow Drake. You have to own one piece of clothing with Toronto on it. You have to slide.
That's fair.
Yeah. You can follow me on social media, on Instagram as kombucha.mommy, which is like another dorky Toronto reference to Champagne Papi.
That's fine. I'm not judging. And,
thanks. And that's about it, I think.
Awesome. So listen, thank you very much for being here. I appreciate you taking some time out of your day to, I think it was a little bit more than what we expected, but thank you for coming out and talking shop and kind of giving everybody some information and helping everyone kind of get an idea of the whole mindset, mindfulness, and, you know, nutrition, performance nutrition. So it was really interesting to talk to you. Thank you very much again. And I hope we can do this again sometime pretty soon.
Yes, definitely keep me posted on what you're up to too. I'm happy to support.
Absolutely. Awesome. Thank you very much. Talk soon. And for those of you watching at home or listening to the podcast, keep building that foundation and definitely stay safe, guys. Bye.